We're continuing the Ein Yaakov. We're up to page Kuf Dalet, Daf Samach Gimel in the Talmud. Darash Bar Kafra. Bar Kafra taught the following. We know the Talmud tells us in Kiddushin that there are certain responsibilities that every father has for his son. You have to circumcise your son. Firstborn boy that's born, if his father or mother aren't Kohanim or Levim, so the first son boy has to be redeemed, right? It's verses in the Torah. We redeem him with 5 coins. We give a coin, 5 coins. So there are different mitzvot that a father has to perform on behalf of his son. We educate our children. One of the mitzvot is to teach them a trade, to teach your son a way of supporting himself. You have to teach your son how to swim so that if he's ever shipwrecked, he could try and save himself. There are different responsibilities a father has. One of them is to teach him some kind of trade, some way of supporting himself. When my father paid for our driving lessons, he told us each, "I am now fulfilling my responsibility of teaching you a trade. Because worst case scenario, you could be a taxi driver. You want to go to college? That's another story. But taxi driver I've covered." They also funded going to college. But the first step when we were 16 or 17, when we took driving lessons, so my father told us, now I've done my minimum. So we're supposed to teach our children a trade. Says Bar Kafra, Le'olam yelamed adam et bno umanut nekiya vekala. When you teach your son a trade, pick a trade that is clean and easy, what we might call white-collar work. Maihi. What's a good example of that? So the Talmud says, Amar Rav Yehuda, an example of that is Machta de Talmiyuta. That's a type of weaving. Teach him how to sew clothing with a small needle. So some kind of tailor, that's considered an easy and clean job in their days. I think today it's also relatively clean, relatively easy. So obviously it's a skill. But here they give a specific type of sewing. I don't know the exact sewing. It's some kind of profession where you'd have to sew straight stitches. So teach them how to do that. So that's the advice they give us. When you're choosing a trade for your son, choose something that's clean and easy. Amar Rav Amnuna, Haro'e Uchlusei Yisrael. Rav Amnuna tells us, when you see 600,000 Jews at a time, what's the biggest number of people you've ever seen together? I saw a YouTube video of what happened at Cairo Square. I don't know how many people were there.
How many Jews go to the big Shiva Shah
in right, so that's that was 100,000. We didn't hit. Nope, you got to hit 600,000. 600,000. So that big Shiva Shah, so didn't hit it. So if you do see 600,000, what? A huge soccer game? They get a 500,000 people? I don't know of any stadium here today that can house that. Are there stadiums in the world? In the Olympics? I don't think they had 500,000. 600,000 is over 500,000 people. So if you see 600,000, so then there's a special blessing. Omer, he says the following blessing. Baruch Chacham Harazim. Blessed is the one who's so smart that he knows all the secrets. What does that mean? That you see all these people, everyone has a different face, everyone has different thoughts. And Hashem is so smart that he knows what's going on in the heart of every single person. So there's a special blessing. So why do you say it when you see 600,000? So we learned in Nachmanides' work of his speech that we learned on Fridays, Torat Hashem Tmima, that when it comes to different types of people, the total number of types of people there are in the world is 600,000. That's a number that's representative of the types of people in the world, the types of attitudes and thoughts and personalities. You want to know how many are there in the world? So he says that's the secret number. If he sees Uchlusei Avdei Kochavim, if he sees pagans getting together, and he sees 600,000 over 500,000 pagans getting together, Omer Boshaim Chem, he looks at them and says, "Whoa, your mother should be embarrassed." Why? Because here you have people who are given tremendous potential and they're squandering it. They're going down a path where, in essence, they're not going to be productive the way a human being is responsible to being productive. Why so? So here we have to take a few steps back. The most basic mitzvah for a Jew and a non-Jew is monotheism, is the recognition that there is a creator and I have a responsibility to him. From that, I'm supposed to evolve to understanding that there are morals, there are ethics, and there's a basic system I have to live up to. When a person's a pagan, so then technically he's uprooted the most basic part of that. If there is no God, so then I have no responsibility to him. If I have no responsibility to him, so then people could offer their sons as sacrifices, people can be cannibals. There's no limit. There's no end. When there is a God, you could still be very cruel, right? More people were killed in the name of God than anything else. But if a person is monotheistic, and off of that he has the basis to develop to the seven Noahide laws, to a basic moral system. And that's why when a person sees such a number of people, he sees 600,000 people, that they're all pagans, so then our sages instituted a special blessing where he looks and he says, wow, your mothers should be embarrassed. Look at you, you're squandering the potential you were given as human beings, etc. Tanu Rabbanan, Harei Ochlusei Yisrael Omer Baruch HaRazim, we have another source that says the same idea, She'en Da'atam Domot Zo L'Zo, because the people's personalities are different, Ve'en Partzufoyotehim Domot Zo L'Zo, and their faces are different. Ben Zoma Omer, there was a rabbi who was young and he never got smicha, so he was always called by his father's name. His name was Rabbi Shimon Ben Zoma. But they called him after his father because he never got smicha. So he said, "Ra'a uchlusa al gav ma'ala be'arabait." Ben Zoma himself was standing at the temple, and he looked down the mountain, and he saw a sea of people. There were over 500,000 people beneath him going up to the temple. Amar, he said the following declaration: "Baruch chacham harazim." That blessing he began with. Blessed is the one who knows all secrets. He's so smart. Ubaruch shebara kol eile leshamsheni. And blessed is he who created all of them to serve me. What does he mean by that? So we have to read the next line. Hu haya omer, he would say, Kama yegiot yadga adam arishon ad shematza pat leechol. When Adam was created, think for a minute. He wanted bread. He had to work very hard. Charash, he had to plow the field. He had no tools. He'd have to find some stick to plow the field with. Zara, he had to personally plant the seeds. Katzal, he had to harvest. Amar, he had to make the piles. Dash, he had to thresh. Zara, he had to winnow. Birer, he had to sort through the kernels. Tachan, he had to grind it. Hirkid, he had to sift it. Lash, he had to knead it. Afa, he had to bake it. He had to build the oven. He had to get the firewood. V'achal, and then he could sit down for a meal and eat some bread. Took him a year to get one slice of bread. Poor Adam. V'ani, and I, says Ben Zoma, Mashkim, I get up early in the morning, I go out to the baker, u'motzek kol eilu k'shu mutkan lefanai. All I do is I pay a few shekels and I get ready-made bread. Look at that. V'kama yigiyot yaga adam arishon ad shematza beged lilbosh. And when Adam wanted a garment to wear, he had to work so hard. Gazaz, he had to shear the sheep. Liben, he had to clean the wool. Nipetz, he had to clean it by combing it. Tava, then he had to make string out of it. Arag, he had to weave it. And then he had to make a garment. V'chakach, matzah beg lilvosh. Then he had a garment. V'ani mashkim, I get up early in the morning. U'motzeh kolelu shum tukan lefanai. All I do is go to the store, I buy a garment. Look at how easy life is. So Ben Zoma here, on the simple level, what did Ben Zoma say? I have appreciation that the world consists of many people. So we all help one another. Each person is supportive of the system. And life is beautiful. I don't have to work to make my own bread and get my own clothes. Right? That seems to be the simple reading of what he said. But there's something deeper going on here, which was a discussion among philosophers, and Maimonides wrote about this, which we'll explore in a minute. So Ben Zoma says, I have all these things so easily. So before we go deeper on the simple level, there's an aspect of appreciation. If we'd go back to Adam and tell him, imagine a world where all you have to do is get up in the morning and go out and get yourself a loaf of bread, he'd say, that's the Garden of Eden. right? In the Garden of Eden, I didn't have to work for my bread. Now I have to work. Now imagine we went back. You don't even have to go back 150 years. I spoke to my wife's grandparents. They're still alive. I wish them longevity till 120. They told me in Hungary, they didn't have running water. They didn't have electric. So imagine you'd visit them, these people, as children. You're not talking about someone who isn't around, someone who's still around. And you told them, could you imagine a world where you turn a knob and you have water running into your house? You push a button and there's a light that turns on. You push another button, you get cold air in the summer. You push another button, you get hot air in the winter. You have a special box, you have food you just cooked, you put it in the box and it doesn't spoil, it stays cold. What would they say? That's the Garden of Eden. What do we say? But why don't I have an iPhone? I want my internet speed to be a tetrabyte fast. Why am I only up to 20 gigabytes? I don't get it. The world, oh, it's so upsetting. We have all kinds of issues. My Ferrari only hits, my turbo isn't high enough. And, I hear there are people who have helicopters and private planes, and all I have is a little Ferrari or whatever. You're laughing, but the truth is, if we think about it, our own grandparents. My grandfather was a wealthy businessman in Bnei Brak. He was the first person to own a car in Bnei Brak. When he would drive down the street, so all the kids would run after him because they never saw such thing as a car. They knew horses and buggies. They never saw a car. So this is my grandfather. This goes back 60 years ago. First car in Israel. I remember my grandparents had a friend who bought a television. First television in the neighborhood. So he called them over and said, come, see what a television is. So they came, and he sat them down, and he took out a toaster. They never saw a toaster either. He put it down in front of them, put in two slices of bread, pushed down the toaster, and said, watch, this is a TV. So they're watching, they're waiting. He wanted to laugh at them, right? He wanted to get a good laugh. So they're sitting there waiting and watching, and they heard this thing about how magnificent the TV is. And suddenly it goes, bing, and out comes the toast, and they jump, and he burst out laughing. Okay, and then he finally showed them what a television was. But, that's our generation. You're not talking about something from a million years ago. We're living dreams. People never dreamed what we're living. So Ben Zoma taught us appreciation that we're not Adam. But we really have to have appreciation. We're living what no one before us lived. No one in the world ever had it as good as we have it. So there's an element of appreciation that we have to have. So you'll ask me, why do I have to have appreciation? So I'll tell you, because you want to be selfish. Let's leave God out of the equation for a minute. For our own sakes, we should have appreciation. Because when a person appreciates what he has, he could be happy. And when a person doesn't appreciate what he has, doesn't matter how much you'll give him, he's not going to be happy. And so forgetting God for a minute, let's leave God out of the equation for our own sake. We should be appreciative of what we have. And then we'll be happier people. Ben Zoma tells us, just think back to Adam. He had to work a year to get one slice of bread. And I get all this bread, and Ben Zoma would make a special blessing over that. How much more so in our generation? Ari.
Well, I was just going to say that it's, I guess it's like real, it's reality that our environment around us blinds us from appreciating what we have. And my question is, is it necessarily worth it? If life back in the day might have been less like extravagant and less like luxurious, but it was more simple, and therefore it would be it would probably be easier to appreciate what there was. Because right now, we're at that level where we're so spoiled, We have a cell phone. Whoever thought of a cell phone, you could communicate with anyone in the world at any given time. But there's so many different kinds out there, and you don't have the best kind. Therefore you don't appreciate like what a cell phone in essence might be. As just a convenience, a means of communication. Whereas back in the day, there might not be cell phones around. But life was more simple in other ways, and therefore now we're blinded by the other, we're blinded by the very things that this story is telling us we should be appreciative of. I don't know if it's so easy to appreciate it if it blinds us so easily.
Is it really better?
I think it's up to us. I'm saying, I think it's better to have air conditioning. I think it's nice to have paper to write on. You know, in the Talmud's days, they didn't have paper. There were Tosfos who wrote what they wrote in blood. They didn't have ink. They felt they have to transmit to the next generation. They literally wrote in their blood. We live such a beautiful life. And I think that, that we, if we appreciate it, then we can enjoy it. If you wake up in the morning, why is it that so many people are seeing psychologists, psychiatrists on psychiatric medication? I think it's rooted in this. If they don't stop to see what I do have and say thank you, they look at what I don't have, what I'd like to have, and I think that's part of what prayer teaches us. I'll tell you a phenomenal story. I met a friend of mine. What?
This part of being spoiled.
Right, but you don't say, okay, so take away everything and then life will be better, because if we're spoiled people, we'll be spoiled whatever state we're in. But if we're appreciative people, then we could really enjoy what we have. I think that's partially true. I think that the media and the education system is to blame. But I think it's also our own responsibility. We have to break out of it. And then we could really enjoy what we have.
I think appreciation is often the direct result of the direct result of accomplishment due to the work that you put into something. And the work these days is a whole lot different than what work might have been 50 years ago. And therefore, you know, like it's even sometimes difficult to appreciate what work is, because right now, okay, you can work super hard at something and it can be like mentally exhausting, but you don't really see the accomplishments, because there might not be an accomplishment. It might be, all right, you just stood in front of a computer screen for 70 hours a month or whatever and typed in numbers for some big company that doesn't even know you exist. And you know, but you made money. You know, you made money enough to get a flat screen television so that you could just like waste your life in front of it. Whereas 50 years ago, okay, you might have had to like work on a farm and you might have had to like be in the sun. But at least you get to eat like the fruits and vegetables that you planted and worked hard over. And like you're happy. Like when you're making soup out of your onions or whatever, and it tastes really good, and it does taste good, but you know that you made it yourself, and like you really put the hard work in. It's more worth it. It's more valuable.
So I think there are two types of appreciation. On the level of appreciation that you're describing, so I hear what you're saying, but I think there's a different type of appreciation, and I think that's an appreciation that stems from the word in Hebrew for thanks, which is modeh. The word modeh in Hebrew means two things. It means to admit, it means to give thanks. And the idea behind it, and this isn't my own thought, this is one of the commentaries on the Codex, on the Shulchan Aruch writes, is that when you say thank you, you're admitting you needed something and you were given something. And I think the root of frustration in our generation stems from our attitude of I deserve. And that's the root of the squatters in Wall Street. That's the root of the squatters in Tel Aviv. The attitude that I should have it better. Whereas, what?
Squatters.
The people occupy Wall Street. What's their claims against Wall Street? I want to have it better. So work and make it better. But why do they have it good and I don't? You want, make it good for yourself. Saying in interviews they couldn't put together a claim. You want to tell me Wall Street is destroying the economy? Explain to me how. Meaning, I'm not saying Wall Street's legit. I'm not saying everything's legit. I'm just saying, but what's your claim against them? What are they doing to hurt you? The basic claim that they could put forth was, why are they living in the lap of luxury and I'm not? They shouldn't be having it so good. Well, maybe they're cheating, but how are they hurting you? So, coming back to here, I think the root, which is taught by prayer, meaning when a person really connects to prayer, so then prayer will train him to view the world in this light, to realize, I'm not owed anything. I won't take my health for granted. I won't take my family for granted. I won't take the weather for granted. everything I have, I have to give thanks for. So thank you and admitting go hand in hand in Hebrew and also in thought. Now, if I don't take it for granted, then suddenly I approach the world differently. And we're out of time, so remind me next time to begin with two phenomenal stories of people's appreciation and where their appreciation came from. One is a story of one who lost a child, and the other one is a story of an orphan and a shower. In case I forget, just remind me next. And the shower. So we'll begin with those two stories next week, Ms. Hashem.